Welcome to another special interview episode for episode 80 as we close out part 6 of Band of Brothers. I am pleased to have with me on this interview Chris Langlois, who is the grandson of Doc Rowe. So welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, man. Glad to be here with you. Appreciate you.
Yeah, I'm really glad to finally be able to talk to you. So I'm going to ask a question that I don't know how you're going to, I don't know how you're going to, where you're going to go with this answer, but we'll wait and see how it goes. When was the first time that you remember hearing that your grandfather was part of Easy Company?
It was, you know, it's funny that you asked that because it's, and people don't believe me because it sounds almost scripted, but I had come home from college on a Sunday, and as I often did, and to get some of mom's cooking and to wash clothes. And I was probably a sophomore or junior in college. And my mom handed me the book, Band of Brothers, Nice Soul since 1992. And she goes, you know, your grandfather jumped on D-Day. Well, I didn't even know what D-Day was. It's crazy. So I didn't even know what that was. And so I turned to the back of Band of Brothers and like a good college student. And of course, he's on 3 pages. So it took, 60 seconds, 90 seconds to read those sentences. And I remember closing the book and it popped. If you close a book perfectly, you know, it makes that popping sound. And I remember thinking, well, obviously he didn't do anything in the war.
Because he's only on 3 pages.
If you're only on 3 pages, you didn't do anything. And that was my first introduction, and it was over. You know, that was 2 or 3 minutes of my life, and then I never thought about it again until literally 2001.
You never spoke to your grandfather about it? Because I know your grandfather passed away in 98. So even after hearing that, you never had the urge to say, hey, Grandpa, or whatever it is that you called him, you know, tell me something that happened or whatever. Nothing?
One of the biggest regrets of my life.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm sorry to bring that up, but that's just. I mean, did you grow up near him or was he like far away?
No, we were in the same town. Just nothing that he talked about with really any of the family. His kids had just a couple of stories, and there was only really one bad story. Most of them were. Like at the end of episode 10, when Winters brings Nixon in and they're staring at the wall of Goering's wine. Mm-hmm. And there's a line in there, which is crazy. When I heard it, I was like, oh my gosh. Winters tells him, make sure the other companies get some too. Well, one of the stories was my grandfather drove one of those trucks and delivered, you know, Goering's liquor, you know, around to the other companies.
Oh, wow.
So literally that line is true. As little as it is. It's just a testament to the accuracy of Band of Brothers. But, you know, he didn't, you know, there's only one story that my aunt had just told me. Well, it's probably been 6 or 7 years, but where he treated one of the guys who had his, you know, either his skull or his scalp, you know, flipped back from being shot. You know, and I've often wondered, is that Grant? Because Grant was shot in the head
at the end of the war. Yeah, that's right. But they had to get the German doctor, the German surgeon. That's right.
So I've often wondered if that was Grant. It could have been any number of guys, you know, who were shot and killed. But, you know, that's literally the only bad story. And so, but we had almost nothing from him. Nobody in the family. Just he just didn't like so many of those guys. Didn't talk about it.
But did he go to the reunions every year?
Not every year. He went to a couple that we know of. One I've got some pictures of with him and Spina in Vegas. But that was later. You could tell he's obviously later in life. And then he was down at the book signing in 1992. That was down in New Orleans. So he was with the guys then. But no, he was definitely not an annual reunion guy.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah, it makes you always wonder why, you know, how some of these men were able to compartmentalize it, you know, and say, okay, you know, this was my life when I was in Europe. And now no one needs to know about it. You know, I'm just going to bottle that up, keep it in. And, you know, apparently based on what you said, you know, till the end of his life, he just didn't tell anyone about it, which, you know, I can understand from a psychological perspective, if he doesn't want to relive it and stuff like that. But, For us as people interested in the history, it's unfortunate that we've lost that amount of information.
Hugely, hugely.
Because I mean, based on conversations I've had with George, both in this season and when he was on my season in Saving Private Ryan, he talked about the fact that going to the reunions was an outlet for these guys because a lot of them at home didn't talk about it. They didn't have any need or urge to talk about it. They would correspond between them, and they would look forward to this once a year conference where they would be able to get around and talk with these guys who understood what they went through
Right.
and stuff like that. So wow. In the miniseries, they mentioned that he was a construction contractor afterwards, or something like that, if I remember correctly. So he didn't do anything medical after that at all.
No, not at all. Yeah, he's in fact, there's a company still in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, with his name in it. And they still do road construction. When I was growing up, I always saw him working on backhoes and bulldozers and loading up sand and gravel and stuff like that from the rivers. He'd work up and down the rivers, loading that into 18-wheelers for construction projects. So as a young boy, that was always very cool to go jump on the backhoe and climb on that heavy machinery. So yeah, but his whole life was in one way, shape, or form construction, gravel and dirt and all that kind of stuff for projects. So yep.
So just like you didn't know that he did anything during World War II, you also didn't know that he had this medical background training, however you want to mention it.
No, in fact, he didn't have any when he went to the war. His DD-214, which is the form discharge paper, I think is what it said back in World War II. The common this day and age is a DD-214 form when you leave the military. It had him listed as a eighth grade education, and he was a shrimp fisherman.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, so the Army turned him into a medic. But he neither came from a medical background nor returned to a medical background when he came home.
And did he start off I'm assuming you've researched a little bit about his history in the army. I mean, do you know when he volunteered or when he joined?
I mean, I could look that up. I know it was in Louisiana, but unfortunately, in 1973, there was a huge warehouse fire in St. Louis that lost millions of records, and a lot of those were World War II. So we don't have any of his military records other than a copy of that discharge paper. That's all we have. So
Oh wow.
no, we know, yeah, we
No,
know
so
he won medals. We don't know why.
you don't know if he decided that to join because of Pearl Harbor or anything. You don't even know when approximately he joined.
If you'd have given me, I'd look it up. Let's see if I can look it up while we're having this chat. But no, and we don't know why he became a medic.
And was he in Tekoa with everybody, or
He
he
was
joined
not.
afterwards?
He joined right after. We think he joined at Camp McCall, which would have been right after they left Ocoa. So he participated in all those maneuvers.
So he then
But
went
the
to jump school. He did jump school with them, basically.
So he would have, he would have done Benny. I don't know that he, I would assume, but not 100% sure.
Okay, because he did jump on D-Day, right?
In fact, he's the only medic in that company from D-Day to Hitler's Eagle's Nest. He's the only medic that made it all the way through.
Okay. He's the only one who made it through. He wasn't the only medic.
Correct. Right. The only one who jumped on D-Day and then made it all the way through the war to the Eagle's Nest. Yeah. Everybody else was either hurt or killed on D-Day, or they were obviously replacements after the fact. Yeah.
That's so fascinating.
So, hey, I found that discharge paper. He was inducted on December 12th, 1942, in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Oh wow. Okay, so that was a year after Pearl Harbor. So he didn't go in because of Pearl Harbor. How old was he back then in 42? What year
Let's
was he born?
see. October of 22, so he
So he
was
was 20.
20 years old.
20,
20 when he.
right, he was just 20 at that point. And when was he discharged? What was his discharge date?
Let's see. 30 of November 1945.
Interesting. Okay. Very cool.
November 16th. So same thing. Yep, November 16th. 2 years, 2 months, and 23 days of foreign service.
Well, more than anyone really needed to have to deal with psychologically.
For sure. For sure.
Try to reconstruct the history of what he did as much as you can.
As much as I can, to tell the story. Obviously, Roe was a very integral part of the series. He's a that episode and that character, when I say it from that end. But my grandfather was a very popular figure from the miniseries. So honoring these guys, has become a passion of mine since 2001.
And so I'm assuming you've had conversations with the men at the time. Unfortunately, none of them are still around, but in 2001 they all were still around. So
Yeah, a lot of us.
you probably heard stories about your grandfather from them.
I did hear a few stories.
Are there that many third generation people that are involved in the Band of Brothers, I guess, forum? Or is it 'cause from what I know from George, most of the people are, I guess, second generation.
A lot of them are. So we still do the reunions. So the men had their so next year will be with the 80th Easy Company reunion. So it'll be the 80th anniversary this year. And so, the men, obviously, from the next year after the war on, got together every year. And the men had their last reunion in 2012, and it was in Kansas City. And they just decided it wasn't enough of them, too much to travel. So they said, this is our last year. But us kids have become so close that we've continued the reunion tradition ever since. And yes, George is right. A lot of who attend now are the second generation. So it's harder to get this third generation to come. It's something we've definitely talked about, because one day, if we don't have more third generation and fourth generation, the reunions will die. They will die with the
Are
man. And that's a
are there fourth generation people that show up also?
I took my daughter to the reunions. She was only a couple months old when she went to her first Band of Brothers reunion.
Oh, wow.
And so she went for the first, I guess, 5 years of her life, because she wasn't in school. But then obviously, when school kicked in, because the reunions are normally, the men had theirs in the first week in October. So school's in session, and
It
so
wasn't
she hasn't been
over the weekend.
since.
They would do it during the week.
They would make a long weekend out of it normally. Come in on Wednesday or a Thursday. Some of them come in on Friday, and make a long weekend out of it.
Oh, wow. Right. I mean, George told me the story that in 2012, the men had they said, okay, everybody who's not one of the originals, get out of the room. They had their conversation. They said, okay, we're passing on the baton. And so have you been to every reunion since 2001 when you said you first?
With a few exceptions that I missed, yes, I've made all the reunions.
Oh wow. And how is it decided where the reunion is going to be each time? Because again, majority of the people are going to have to travel. So I mean that's also everyone has to start dealing with paying for flights and things like that. It's like, because it's all over the US. It's not like you can say, okay, let's find a central place where it's close to everybody and stuff like that.
And we do it just like the men did. On the last night, the men got together. The wives were not in the room, just the men. And they got together and voted where the next year's reunion was. And we do the same thing now. So for us, it's just the family members, not the spouses or anything like that. Not any friends that may be at the reunion. It's just the family, and we get together, and we decide. And we kind of, sometimes it's at a city where one of us live. When we did it in San Diego a couple of years ago, Tim Pinkala, lives out there. And so that it does make it easier when you have somebody on the ground that can meet with the hotel and that kind of stuff. But I did the Atlanta reunion from Dallas 1 year, 100, not there. So it just depends. But what if somebody's there, if there's a certain event. We did Benning, which is obviously a big deal, and Bragg, and we just did Fort Bragg. So obviously, being at a place where airborne history is important, where there's museums where we can go and see the museums and learn some stuff. that's important. But sometimes, and we try to alternate. If it's on the East Coast 1 year, we try to alternate, and it's on the West Coast next year. Give those people a chance not to have to, fly 4 hours across the country. So, but we still do. It's kind of cool that we still honor, and do some of the same things that the men did the same way. So.
Oh wow! Well, again, because you've all been there. That's how you were taught that these are where you need to go. That's what you do.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's just amazing that you guys continue it. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the miniseries. So you said you read the book and then you didn't think about it for a few years, and then you were told that they're going to start making a miniseries. Like, how did that come about for you?
Yeah,
Because again,
it's
you're
so far
third
forget.
generation, so my assumption is that they would have been in contact with second generation, and then, and then it'll trickle down.
The first words that we heard was Shane, who played Paw, had reached out to I found out later he reached out to Rose's second wife. So and she thought it was a prank call. She literally hung up on him. But he ended up trading emails with my aunt, Maxine. And that's where we kind of got an inkling that something was going on. But even then, I mean, I look back and it's like, okay, because again, if he only is on three pages, why would he be a part of anything
Right.
big by Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg? So, it's funny when we look back, it's like, no big deal. There wasn't any like, oh my gosh, find out more and what's the deal and all that stuff. So it's still for us initially, it was very low key is not even the word. It wasn't even hardly a blur, blip on the radar.
Right. No, because I'm thinking for the fact that an actor is already calling you means that the part has been cast. It's not as if. It's not like we're fishing around trying to find somebody who might play this character, who's based on your grandfather, based on your papa, and but again, it's here. You said it's Shane actually called up, your papa's wife and said, "All right, I want information about him," and she just hung up the phone on him. I mean, it's a great story, but especially given the fact that from what I've heard, you guys still have a very strong connection to Shane, which means that having the phone hung up on him isn't what turned him away. He still went after you. He says, "I still want to know more about him."
That's right. Yeah. And so, even, we and we found out late because the premiere for the miniseries was June 2001 in Normandy. And HBO did a huge shindig. Everything that HBO did was top notch all the way through. But they had a chartered plane for all the vets. I think it was American. And we didn't find out about that till very late. So we, in fact, the hotel that they were all staying at was completely booked. So we found out so late there weren't any rooms available. We had to get another hotel room in Paris. So we were just, I don't know, man, we just weren't in the loop about it from the start. But we were lucky that we found out enough in time, got a hotel, did the Paris premiere, because that was really the whole family's introduction to this whole thing. We had no idea.
And you didn't even know at that point how much Doc Rowe was going to appear in the series. You
No,
needed
and
the
so
character. That's it. He's going to be 3 minutes over the course of the entire 10 parts.
And it's funny you say that because when we got to Paris and we checked in at the hotel with HBO, I was at the front. I just happened to be at the front of the group, and I said, we're with the Rowe family. And the girl from HBO goes, "Oh, you're gonna love episode six. It's all about your grandfather." And I literally said, "Why would it be about my grandfather?"
Oh,
So,
how many
a
family?
lot
How many of
of
your family members went with you?
And it was like 10 or 12 of us. We had a big crew.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we had a big group. And we had no idea what we were getting into.
And they didn't
We
show you episode six at the premiere.
They did not. No, they did not. No. We saw a little bit of one and all of two and just snippets of the rest. Yeah. So we watched episode six like the rest of the world did. We watched it on Sunday when it came on. That was our introduction,
But
full-fledged.
what was your family's interaction with Shane during, I guess, the filming process?
I don't think we had any. I'd have to go back and ask my aunt, but I don't think she had any more interaction with Shane while he was filming.
How did he know what to do to, you know, give over a performance of your grandfather?
You know, he spent a lot of time talking to Spina, who was good friends with my grandfather. Spina came in around Bastogne, mm-hmm. and before Bastogne, a little bit before Bastogne. So I think Spina was a big insight into who my grandfather was as a medic. And, you know, they had done a lot of other, Bruce McKenna had done a lot of research into medics in Bastogne specifically. Mm-hmm. And so I know a lot of that information was given to Shane on how to be a medic. It's funny because since you brought that up, when you go back and look now, when you see Shane squatting on his heels, mm-hmm. like up against the tree, there's a famous scene where he's very pensive sitting up against the, my grandfather squatted down on the back of his heels like that.
Wow.
And so the fact that Shane did it and had no idea was really serendipity.
Did he know, or it was something that Spina told him that?
No, he just did it. Nobody told him until after the fact. So
yeah, that's just crazy.
It is. And I didn't realize that, of course, you know, I didn't see but my mom told me, you know, he squatted down because he got that from his mom. And I go, oh my gosh, Shane does that in the series. And we made that connection. It's like, man, that's so cool.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And so watching Shane's performance, did it remind family members of your grandfather besides the squat or not really? Because, you know, again, as you said, if he didn't really speak to you guys, so there isn't much that he could have known specifically, unless he just was learning about the, you know, the Louisiana area. Even though I've heard that they got something wrong there with your grandfather. Then they said that your grandfather was from some particular place, and he wasn't. You would know better than I would.
I think the part where they said his mother or his grandmother was a treasurer,
right? Yeah, yeah,
healer.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was that wasn't real. And he didn't really speak French, so he probably would not have, you know, had a lot of French to say in the real world. But
in the miniseries, you got to see some pretty nurses and speak to them in French.
That's right. That's right. And she was real, as you know. Yeah. She was probably not where he was,
right?
But she was definitely real. Augusta Chewy, the other nurse, was real. And Hollywood kind of moved them down the street a little bit because she was at the 10th Armored Aid Station, not the 101st. So they slid her down the street a little bit. But I think it was an interesting way to bring her story, their story, into reality and bring it to attention.
Yeah.
And kind of give that episode kind of gives a pause, you know, to the fighting, mm-hmm. And brings out a bit of the humanity, which is pretty cool.
Right. Yeah. It shows, I mean, whether it's true about what happened with your grandfather or not, but it shows that, okay, you know, here is a guy who cares about what's going on and cares about the men and is doing all that he can to help them. And, you know, in this dire situation where he's pretty much the only one who can move from place to place, and he's, you know, and he's got to do it as, quietly and as secretly as possible, passing stuff between the guys, stuff like that. I mean, again, it's I can never say which is my favorite part of the 10 parts, because I love the whole thing as a whole. But it no, Bastogne is up there very high, you know, for me.
100%.
You know, I love the first part, and I love, you know, actually I love all 10 parts.
There's something to love about each one.
Yeah, because each of them are very different, and that's what's great about it. You know, they give us a different perspective from a different character, and, you know, even though Bruce has told us that a lot of it is made up bullshit, and that's fine, you know, but it's based on truth, you know. But then you have to put in the Hollywood filler to make it a little more appetizing, I guess you can say. But you know, the fact that most of the men are very pleased with what was put on the screen is great, except for the ones who, you know, who aren't shown at all.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a tough part. That's a tough pill to swallow for a lot of guys. And the reality of trying to put 10 parts together, and so many of those guys have said it, and they're accurate. They're 100% right. You could make another Band of Brothers, 10 parts, 10 hours, have a whole new set of guys, and still have another miniseries. There's so many stories that could have been told. Yeah.
It's true. The truth is, I think they can make even more than 10 parts with the number of men that were in Easy Company. I mean, what was there, like 260 guys in Easy Company over the course of the entire thing? And what did they focus on? 25, something like that. So yeah, there's a lot more stories. I mean, even there are things that they just mention in passing that are stories that are a few paragraphs in the book itself. Even in the episode with Blythe where he asks, who's been injured or who have we lost or something like that, and they just throw out a name. And I went up and I looked up the name, and here we had the whole story about what happened to this guy. And it was like, wow. So yeah, there's so much more that they could have done. But I still think, I mean, from my perspective, obviously from the family's perspective it might be different, but I still think they did an amazing job putting it together with what they did. Because we can connect to almost
Of
all of the
course.
characters that we get to see on screen. And again, unfortunately, you can't get everyone. But they still just the way that Bruce and Eric and all of them put these stories together was just amazing from my perspective. There you
Yeah,
are
absolutely.
sitting watching episode six. Actually, your grandfather shows up in a few other episodes beforehand. I mean, I think the first episode where we see him in is the one with Blythe, where he's talking about hysterical blindness and he's helping Winters, with his ricochet in the leg and stuff like that. So, and Bruce mentioned to me that the writers all talked about it. When they were putting, they would say, "Can you put in a little scene with this character?" So that when he comes up later, he's not someone we've never seen, that type of thing.
Because the evolution of that episode was initially going to be about Graves' registration unit, some of the original ideas, and so then it evolved to into the medic, and that was obviously something that you're right, they had to start saying, hey, we got to put him in here a little bit more so we don't have to explain who the medic is and why, his importance, and that was a big thing they talked about at the beginning when you
Yes,
watch
sir.
it the first time. Everybody's wearing the same outfit. It's dark. Their faces are dirty. They're covered by a helmet. Even Tom Hanks says that at one point. He goes, "We had guys taking off their helmet in
No,
combat
no, no,
when in
no, no.
real life
We
they would never ever."
talked about that, I think,
No,
in
rule number
was it
one.
maybe it was episode maybe when I was dealing with part two. That there were guys running around without
Yeah.
helmets. It's like, what? But
Yeah.
it's to be able to let
Yeah.
us know who it
But you
is.
have to do it because
Yeah, of course.
you gotta be able to identify these guys. So yeah, so it was cool that it's still very cool to me. It's still very, very cool that there's an episode about my grandfather. And so the fact that they, our family is lucky enough that they did that and didn't continue down the Graves registration or something else. And that he was focused and that yeah, then he got a little bit more screen time at the beginning to establish his
It's true.
character.
And I mean,
We're blessed for it.
so is the miniseries what got you hooked after that? Because you said before the reading the book, all right, he's there
100%.
3 times. They're inviting us to Normandy. All right, fine, we'll go. And then you see him and you
Yeah.
see how prominent he's shown in the story. That's what got you more interested in the whole thing.
100%. I had no books about World War II on my shelves until June of 2001, and now I have a lot of books on World War II now, and so that just started me on the path, and that's that discussion has not been so much as of late. It was in the first few years when Band was having so much success, and it was Easy Company, Easy Company, Easy Company, and guys in the 506 and the 501st and the 82nd, they're like, hey, there were other guys doing this stuff. And, there was a little bit of resentment and talk. There's always naysayers. But, for me, there's nobody more personal about, learning about World War II when my grandpa is the one on TV. I know your grandfather's not on TV, but I went and read, I started with all the 506 guys, Burgett and Bill True and all those guys had stories, books out. I went and bought all their books, so I wanted to learn more about the 506, and then that just expanded. I wanted to learn about the 82nd, and then, the breakout at Normandy. So now you're looking at other infantry units and tank divisions and things like that. So it expanded, exponentially for me. And that was always the hope that, and all the guys said, listen, we know we didn't win the war. We're just lucky enough that we had a reunion in New Orleans where Stephen Ambrose was, right? So we just picked the right city at the right time to have our reunion. And I think it was even as crazy as, Ambrose saw an article in the newspaper and he just showed up at their reunion, right? And so then he realized I've got a great group of guys that are very well connected. And I've got Dick Winters who kept tons and tons of paperwork. And so from a historian point of view, right, facts, documents are huge. So it was just a series of events that led to the book being written, that led to the movie being done. And so that part of learning Band of Brothers, I like to use the word springboard because I use that for my books. Band of Brothers was a springboard for so many people, millions of people around the world to go, hey, what a great story. I want to learn more. And that's where they run off and go do their own research and their own reading. And so many veterans were interviewed after that. Those memories were captured for the guys who were left. So it was a huge boon for history and honoring these guys and bringing respect to these guys that wasn't there before. Saving Private Ryan
Right.
started it,
Well,
but
again,
Band of
Saving
Brothers
Private
really
Ryan
shot
is
it
what
off.
got Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg interested. That's where
That's right.
it came from. But yeah, for sure. I mean, and think
That's
about
right.
it. It's been,
Yep.
25 years since Band of Brothers came out, and it's been 28 years Saving Private Ryan came out. So again, that and people are still talking about it. And unfortunately, none of the men are
That's right.
still around,
Yeah,
but the
big time.
honoring them and honoring their story is something that continues. I mean, again, that's what I'm doing here. The same type of thing. I'm passing it on,
Right.
and for me, I regret the fact that I never had a chance to meet any of these guys. But so I'm only learning about them through through people that knew them, like you. So yeah. It's just great to think about it. So the first time you met the men was when you were in Normandy, basically.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh wow. And did they say to you, hey Chris, we're doing a reunion in October, we want you to come? Or how did that play out?
Yeah, I think it was just a, because so many of the families came together in 2001. Again, we're not the only family who this was a surprise, learning about, even you think guys like Garnier, they're. His granddaughter said they weren't even real sure how he lost his leg. That was,
Really?
yeah. So it was a, or the story, they knew it was the war, but they didn't know the story because he didn't talk about it. And, so many of these families learned about their guy, from the series. And so I think that, I don't know if the veterans had a specific meeting about it, but I mean, there was a bunch of us. The 2002, 2003 reunions were in Phoenix. Both of them were in Phoenix. And they were huge because obviously everybody was obviously very excited about it. So we had a lot of family members. We even had some of the actors. We had five or six of the actors come to the 2002 reunion. Settle and Cutlets was there, Spate was there, Gomez was there. So we had a big gathering those next 2 years with all the families. And it was just, if you're family, you can come. Come on. You don't need a
Wow.
special invitation.
Wow. That just amazes me, that there's this reunion that's been going on for 80 years. It's like, and that you would think that over the course of 80 years there'd be less people showing up, when in the end, the circle keeps expanding because of the book, because of the miniseries and stuff like that, because of the interest that people had. I mean, I remember that George once told me that in in the days when it was just the men at these reunions, sometimes one of the men would bring some other veteran, whether it was from World War II or from another war, you'd bring him to the reunion, so that it, the idea was, is it's not just the men of Easy that are the Band of Brothers, it's all of us that
Sure.
are, that are veterans, and they would give an outlet for these other people to talk about their experiences, and here were men that understood what they were. It was sort of like a group therapy session type of thing.
100%, 100%. Yeah.
Here's this group of people that understand what you went through, and let's talk about it. We know you can't talk about it with your family. We don't care that you weren't in the Easy Company. You were in item company in Korea. I'm just throwing things out, whatever. And here, have a seat at the table with us. We'll talk to you. 100%. We understand what you're going through.
Yeah, and like no one else can.
That's right. That's right. And it's just hearing these type of stories is just so amazing. And again, just thinking about the fact that we're coming up on 80 years of having these reunions is just unbelievable to me. From that perspective. And again, here we talked about it before, second generation, third generation, maybe even fourth generation are continuing this tradition in order to have a way of continuing to honor the men that started it. Obviously the conversations are going to be different. Like what do you guys talk about now? You just talk about stories about the men.
We do. We do. We've got, we've got a couple of guys that are good friends of us, of the families, and pretty good historians. And so, photo albums get brought and Christensen, Tim Christensen came a few years ago. Tim and Chris Christensen came, and they had not come for a while. We were out in LA. I think it was the LA reunion. And he brought a photo album that nobody has seen. And he had photos of my grandfather that nobody in our family had seen. It was from Berchtesgaden. There's a couple of photos of him, of my grandfather in German uniform. But he had a couple more photos that nobody in our family had ever seen. So yeah, there's new things to talk about. And, we had where, you sit around the table and, we get a hospitality, we call a hospitality suite at the hotel. We get a big banquet room or something like that. And, you got the typical hotel white tablecloths and round tables, and everybody's just sitting around having their chats and we had one time where it's like, stand up and say one thing about, your veteran that maybe we don't know, war related or not. Because learning about these guys after the war, to me, to a lot of us, is just as interesting as their war experiences, right? Who they were as men after the war.
Especially since their stories are so different
100%.
After the war, as opposed to when they were in the war,
So yeah, there's still plenty to talk about. And, you hear stories and you're like, oh, I'd forgotten about that. So it's always neat to get to. It's never a place where it's like, we got to hear George Luz tell that story again. No, it's never like that. Even if you heard George Luz tell 10 stories about his dad, it's still, it's still cool to hear it. And there's always something like, oh, I'd forgotten that little tidbit or I didn't know that. So it's always very cool.
Does someone keep notes so that you have all this?
No, we should, now that you say that, right? Yeah. No.
Or at least recording it.
Yes, I know. Now you're going to make us bring a recorder.
In this day and age, everyone's got cameras. Everyone's got phones.
That's right.
Yeah. It's not that difficult. You don't have to lug in a huge tape deck in order to record it.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm assuming you're one of now the people who spearhead the reunions. You're part of the cabal, I guess you could say. The
cabal is a good word. I like it.
I mean that in the nicest way.
I know. Of course you do. I am. I'm very passionate about it, and so I've in a lot of ways, I've been a kind of a take charge of the reunions and make sure that they continue on. I do a t-shirt every year for the reunion. I do a challenge coin. I make a challenge coin every year for the reunion.
What's a challenge coin?
So in the military and in it's kind of transferred into the police world, generally around piece of metal, an inch and a quarter in diameter. So back in the day, you would have your unit coin, whatever the you know whatever you need, you had to have it in your pocket. And so when you were out drinking, you could slap your challenge coin down on the bar, and if your partner or whoever if they didn't have their coin, they bought the round. So that was kind of that's the story, the legend of how the challenge coins. Now it's really used to commemorate, you know, your unit, a battle, honor a guy, a fallen soldier or officer, commemorate dates, anniversaries. So it's a huge, if you Google it, and it's a big trading. So guys trade those coins. So it becomes a collecting thing.
Okay. So basically it's a way to commemorate each of the reunions.
Commemorate, yeah. So I've done that every year, you know, to keep that tradition alive in the military with the challenge coins. And, you know, I just think it's a neat way, you know, almost all of my wardrobe is Easy Company reunion t-shirts and sweatshirts. So, I mean, almost every time I leave the house, I'm wearing a Band of Brothers something shirt.
And do people stop you and say, what, you know, are you connected, or are they just,
yeah, I would think that it would be more often than it has. And sometimes I see people look at it and kind of point to their whoever they're with, and they don't come up and say anything, obviously. But yeah, I think it's, I've had times where people say something like, oh man, that was a great miniseries. And I'm like, well, if you remember the medic, that's my grandfather. And so,
oh wow,
get to chit chat a little bit. And so, yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. That's great. Is there anything else that you want us to know about your grandfather or the men or something about Band of Brothers in general?
You know, I tell people all the time, you know, he's my hero too. Pawpaw is my hero too. And what a lot of people don't know is, you know, when they watch that series and they go, you know, this is Shane Taylor playing, this is Doc Rowe, right? This is, and we see Shane Taylor playing Doc Rowe. And, you know, you talked about what the other men had very different lives, very varied lives. You know, my grandfather was an alcoholic after the war, and it cost him his marriage to my grandmother, who was a British girl that he met before D-Day. And so, you know, the war impacted these guys in serious ways. And for you to, you talked earlier, compartmentalize, for you to compartmentalize that experience is pretty breathtaking when you think about it. I'm a talker. I'm just naturally a talker. You know, there's no way that I could have gone through that war and then just go, I'm done. You'll never hear a story out of me. We don't, you know, nothing of that. And so,
but we're all built now differently than the men were built back then.
100%.
It's a completely different time. I mean, back then, these are men whose parents or themselves went through the Depression. You know, it's a completely different time. Yep. People are much more open now than they were back then.
Yep, I agree. I agree.
The question that I'm curious about is, you know, did your grandmother or Pawpaw's second wife, did they know any of the stories?
You know,
or did he keep it from them also?
Yeah, another I should have gone over and started having those kind of conversations too. Because by the time the series came out, I lived in Dallas, so I'd already left Louisiana. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I should have gone and talked to her. His first wife died a year after him. So I lost both of those,
you know, right,
very quickly, and then by the time 2001 came, they were gone. But you know, as much as my grandmother, you know, it was an ugly breakup, an ugly divorce, as most of them are, but you know, my mom said she told him she threw away all his medals and all that stuff, but she didn't, she kept them. So even through all of her anger of the divorce, she still kept his stuff, and so I have his medals. But then, you know, again, we're back to the same thing. You know, I've got two Purple Hearts sitting in a case and don't know the why, you know. And he was on the line, he was never seriously injured. We think he had a scar on his calf from maybe a barbed wire in Holland or something like that. But he was never
off. There's no record anywhere of this.
All burnt up in that St. Louis fire.
Wow.
And we even tried again after the series came out because we had a congressman that would that was helping us. Because one of the perks of being famous in a TV show, but even then, nothing, all gone.
Wow.
So that was, these guys, when you watch the series, and we're again, we're I'm a fan. I like to watch the series. I enjoy it as a fan. And but then when that last credit rolls at the end of episode 10, these guys had a life. And Malarkey's the same thing. Malarkey, when you read a Malarkey's book, he struggled with alcohol. Literally, his wife and packed up the stuff and took the girls. Like that's how bad it was. And
Right.
not everybody dealt with it in the same way. And my mom said something years later that finally clicked, because obviously my grand so Pawpaw met Vera, his wife, before D-Day, and they got engaged. He stood her up on D-Day. They were to be married on June 6th.
Oh, well, he sort of didn't have a choice.
He didn't have a choice, right? So, not a
Sorry,
so.
girls think I'm supposed to get married today and I
That's
can't
right.
make
No. Call Hitler, tell him we're going to pause the war. That's not how it works.
it. No.
But he marries her after he comes back, right? And my mom said something, and it just clicked in me. And she says, "I do not believe the man that my mother met was the man that she married."
Wow. Okay, makes sense.
Then it all makes sense. Yeah. He's the only medic in that company from D-Day to Hitler's Eagles. He's the only medic that sees every one of those guys hurt or killed. He was never off the line except for maybe a day or two. He saw all those guys, every one of them hurt or killed. What was left of Pinkala and Muck? That he was there because he went and because I talked to Malarkey. Malarkey said, "Your grandfather came up to me and said, 'Do I want to see the guys?' And he's like, 'No, I don't want to see them like that. I don't remember them like that.'" So I mean, how do you deal with all of that carnage, and be the same and be normal? There's a quote at the World War II Museum in New Orleans when you're going through the exhibits. There's all these quotes on the wall, and there's a quote. And I wish I remember the guy's name, but it said, "No man goes to war and comes back normal."
It's understandable.
And so what these guys did, heroic, that they put together, lives afterward, even more so heroic. It was just something that we enjoy the pageantry, for lack of better words, of the series, and we get enthralled in the series. And then when we stop the play, we forget sometimes that these guys were real human beings and had to come back. And so, yeah, I like to remind people that that's the kind of stories that you want to learn about also.
Correct.
That's the books you want to read where, hey, what happened afterward? What did these guys do? And sometimes how did they deal with or not deal with it? Shifty's book is really good, and because you can hear his voice. And there's a spot at the end where, and Shifty was all the way through the war. Remember, he was, they did the lottery so he could go
Right.
home. Of course, he gets hurt. Poor
Yeah, you're right. The plane crashed or
the truck crashed.
the truck,
Yeah,
right.
he was in a big body cast. He ended up not making it home, beating the guys, but never off the line, right? He was big time out in front, scout and always on patrols and things like that. So the fact that he never got hurt was amazing. But he said, "I remember being back home at my parents' house in West Virginia." Of course, rural is in the 1940s for West Virginia would be an understatement. But he's home, he's safe, he's alive. He has all of his limbs. And he goes, "I remember wanting to be back in Europe with my buddies." Now that's just a sentiment that we cannot comprehend. You lived, you survived all of this, and you're home safe. Nobody's going to hurt you in your parents' house. And he missed what he had. He goes, "How can I explain any of this to my parents?" And so what these guys did and what they endured and then what they had to live with and how they had to live with it is just as heroic as anything that they did on the battlefield.
Yeah, it's true. Wow, that is amazing. So thank you very much for talking to me and for everyone being able to hear this story. This is just it's just amazing.
Yeah,
Thank you
man.
very much for this, Chris.
I appreciate you letting me ramble on a little bit.
No, you didn't ramble for a second. This was great.
You're doing a
This
great
was
job. We got to tell these guys stories.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do here. Trying to do it as well as we can.
Absolutely.
Do you want to let people know how they can get in touch with you if they're interested?
Yeah, so Doc Real Publishing is on Facebook and Instagram, and I try to share some stories of where we go along the way. And I've got three books. Two of them are for kids. So my first book, How Easy Company Became a Band of Brothers, is probably middle school age and up. They're all illustrated. And my second two, Patrick the Paratrooper and Drafty Marches with the Band of Brothers, which is a true story, are elementary age kids. So my goal for a lot of years has been to make sure that these next generations know the stories. And if we can start them as early as elementary school, then I'm going to. So that's been my passion, and I'm fortunate enough to sign books here in America and in Europe. Gosh, now you're gonna have to get me over to Israel one day. We'll have to do a book signing.
If you're here, let me know.
Yeah, I'd love to. But,
definitely so get together with you and show you around.
Yeah, I'd love to. And so it's funny. I'll tell you about the international aspect. I have mailed that first book of mine to 26 countries outside of America. That's how. Wow. That's just ones that I've mailed. That's not if they bought it off Amazon, I don't know about it, but I have mailed that book. So that is just the testimony to the powerful story that Band of Brothers is, that the Easy Company is. It's awesome. It's awesome. And so we got to make sure the next generations know about it too.
Wow. That is amazing. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. So I'll be back on Monday with another interview episode. But until then, Curry!
Curry!